one of the strangest things that we have in Jewish life is the Erev Tav Shimon. Very strange. Why do we have it? What purpose does it serve? How does it serve its purpose? And it's clouded and a great deal of mystery. It's clouded in mystery even to an extent that in the Shas itself they debate how it works. So even to the Amoraim it was unclear. There was not a clear agreement how the Erev Tav Shilim works. And what's particularly peculiar is the way that it actually works and what we actually do really don't have anything to do with each other at all. They're sort of on two different wavelengths. Our involvement with Erev Tav Shilim, is it one wavelength? And its true dynamic is at a totally different wavelength, obscured from anything that we do. Now the first question is, what was the purpose of the Erev Tav Shilim? First thing, for what did they enact? It's a rabbinic takana. For what reason did they make this takana? And it's interesting, even that's not agreed upon. Even that's a matter of debate, why it was made. The one view in the Gemara holds that due to the fact that on Yom Tov there's generally freer license to do malacha, I mean, cooking, for example, is mutar on Yom Tov, the use of fire, not the kindling of fire, but the use of fire is permissible on Yom Tov. Mitzvah carrying is mutar on Yom Tov. So it's very easy to get into a mindset, well, this is a very convenient day to take care of all types of things that I have to do. Now, if I'm going to be at work after Yom Tov, I mean, take for example this year, Shavuos is on Friday and Shabbos. So, Monday, I'm going to be back at work. So, if I want to prepare in advance a few meals for next week, what better occasion is there than Friday? I'm home. I'm not working anyhow. I'm in the kitchen. So, just throw another few portions of food in, and then we'll have supper for Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday while we're at it. Could there be anything more convenient than that? We're in the kitchen. It's the matter. Throw another few portions into the pot. Make another few portions. So it's tempting at times to violate the halacha. Certain times I am in fact allowed to make additional portions, but that's not the subject of tonight. But many times I'm not allowed to make additional portions. And certainly if they're not all cooked in one pot, I certainly cannot make additional portions. So that was the first reason that we have for Erev Tav Shilim. That if we observe the fact that even for the purpose of preparing for Shabbos, I need a special license called Erev Tav Shilim, then I realize that there must be something awry about preparing the Yom Tov L'chol. It obviously can't be the right thing to do. That's reason number one that we want. So, in effect, the purpose then, according to this perspective, is to enhance the observance of Yom Tov. That Yom Tov, Shabbos, can take care of itself. Shabbos, we know, you don't fool around with Shabbos. There's nothing, you're not allowed to cook on Shabbos, so that's it. So we don't have to get ideas into our head to do things we're not supposed to do. But once this license can be dangerous. You can take it too far. So to enhance the observance of Yom Tov, that's one view.
That doesn't really make sense because without preparation, they were not able to prepare much food very far in advance.
Well, that depends exactly. You have to realize, for example, in Pesach and Sukkot, especially in many places in the world, it's very cold. Very cold. Yeah, and it looks like even there, there were people that had the means. Yeah, there are means of, if you have enough money, there are means to do it. Even in European society, without refrigeration, the wealthy people had no problem. And I wondered how, because how it worked. So I asked my father, because he lived in Eastern Europe, in Poland. And so he told me that ice was possessed by two groups of people in the summer months. The bars, they had ice, and the wealthy people had ice. Where did they get ice from? How do you make ice? They all had underground ice houses. And before the thaw, before the spring thaw, they cut blocks and blocks of ice, and they hauled it and put it in underground storage, special insulated underground storage, and it could stay for many, many months in the underground. But this was not the lot of the average person. But there were people that were able to do it. So that really depends. So there are times it's not so hot. If it's cooler, you can get away with it. So this is number one. And particularly, what they were concerned, and it's interesting, and maybe you gave insight into it, the Gemara talks about an ofa miyantuf lechol. Gemara talks more about baking than cooking. Baking you certainly can get away with. Then we'll come back to your observation later. It's a very important observation of how difficult it was to preserve food, and I'll point out something very interesting about the Erev Tavshil itself. That's one reason. A second reason that we find had nothing to do with Yontif per se, but they were concerned with something else, that we would pull out all the stops for Yontif, and we'd say, well, what's Peshavas? Very simple. Whatever's left over from Yontif, that's it. But listen, there'll be plenty of leftovers. If I make a huge, lavish Yontif meal, there'll be no shortage of leftovers. So that's it. Shabbos, we'll eat the leftovers. What's the shlecht? Your leftovers from Yontif can't be too bad. But they wanted a greater kavod Shabbos. So therefore, they insisted on the Erev Tavshilin that we put Shabbos on the agenda on Erev Yontif too. That's two views in the Gemara. Now the question in all of this is, this is all out of sync. Why? The Erev Tavshilim is a rabbinic device. There's no basis in the Torah whatsoever. To do malacha on Yontif for Chol would seem to violate an Issa D'Oraisa. The license to do malacha on Yontif is for Yontif, not for the weekdays. So on what basis does this rabbinic device allow me to do malacha on Friday for Shabbos? Which is, when I heard it's only one day Yontif, so it's not Yontif. Today is Yontif, tomorrow is not. So this is also debated. This is the very famous Gemara Masechet. What happened if a person baked, for example, on Yontif, and he wants to keep the food for Chol? But specifically, that's what he did it for. I baked Chalas Erev Shabbos, and I baked some extra bread for Sunday at the same time while I'm at it. So what's the din? So here we find the machlekes in the Gemara between Rabba and Rav Chisda. Rabba said, very interesting, he had a very interesting theory, which in the halachic terminology is called hovel. Hovel means because. So he said, he made the following reasoning. How likely does it have to be when I cook on Yontif that I'm actually going to use it for Yontif? Does it have to be 100%? Well, let's say maybe it's only 90% it's going to be eaten. Let's say it's 50%. At what point is the cutoff? How do you determine? So the answer is, according to Rava, that Minatara, even though a very remote possibility that will be used suffices. So he said it's very simple. What will happen if on Yontif in the afternoon, you finished the suda hours ago, so Ayid knocks on your door and he asks for food to eat. So what are you going to give him? What you're cooking now for tomorrow, you give him, that's what you'll give him. So there is the remote possibility that it could get used. That's enough to be matter for Yontif. Minatara, not Midrabban, Minatara. And my classic example of this is years back before I lived in Kew Garden Hills, when I lived in Kew Gardens. So one thing about this part of the world, there's a lot of people pass through here because it's sort of the last Jewish neighborhood before the airport. Or on the other hand, this is the first Jewish neighborhood when you come back from the airport. So one Friday afternoon in the dead of winter, when Lech Benchum was about 4:10, at 4:20 there's a knock on the door. Who in the world is coming to my house? I wasn't expecting anyone for the Shabbos. At 4:20 in the afternoon, 10 minutes after Lech Benchum, there's a knock on the door. I open the door, and lo and behold, one of my relatives is standing at the door. They were in flight from London, and the flight was delayed. So they made sure, I don't think they had no check-in baggage, and they made sure they would get off the plane first, and they took a cab, and there was no way they could get to where they lived. So they raced, they took a cab from the airport, and they told them, Kew Gardens. And 10 minutes before Shkia, they knocked on the door. So these things happen. People come from unexpected places at unexpected times. That's one view. A second view in the Gemara is a legalistic approach rather than a practical approach. And that view looks at Shabbos and Yom Tov as Kedusha Achas, as one entity of Kedusha. So rather than break it up into two 24-hour periods, it looks at it as one block that's 48 hours long. It starts Thursday night, and it ends Motzei Shabbos. Now, the Kedusha level varies. Yom Tov is one level of Kedusha, and Shabbos, the Kedusha changes, but it's all one block of Kedusha. And from that standpoint, they look at it as if it would be all one day. It's one long day. It has different aspects. You know, part of the day it's dark, you see the stars. Another part of the day the sun shines. Another part of the day the sun is setting. It's all one day. So these 2 days, halachically, are one day. It's one long day with various motifs. The Yom Tov motif in the first part, 24 hours, and the Shabbos motif in the second, 24 hours. But ultimately, one long day. Consequently, it's very simple. Why can I cook on Erev Shabbos for Shabbos? Because it's all part of one day, halachically. It's Kedusha Achas. There's no, the connection between Shabbos and Yom Tov and Shabbos is seamless. That's this view in the Gemara. Now, this is not just an esoteric machlokas. At this level, it's an esoteric machlokas. Because it's an abstract reason why Erev Tavshilin should work. In other words, based on the fact that there's no Isur Min HaTorah to cook on Friday for Shabbos, either because of Kedusha Achas, it's one block of Kedusha, or because of the possibility, however remote it may be, that it would be used on Shabbos. So either way, on Friday rather, so either way, there's no Malocha that's involved doing it Friday. So once there's no Malocha, then there's room for it's only a question that the Rabbanan made an Isur. So once the Rabbanan made an Isur, the Rabbanan can make a Heter to. Now, we'll come to that in a moment. But this is not only an esoteric machlokas. This machlokas is a very practical, applied side to it as well. Theory often expresses itself in very concrete terms. Principally, most of the poskim accept the view that the reason that the Erev Tavshilin is mutter is because of the principle of Hovel, because of the remote possibility that it will be used Friday. Now, that being the case, then we come to the following. At what point in time that the food that I put up on Friday, when must it be ready? At what point does it have to be ready? Now, let's say if I were late at a typical Friday afternoon. I was late. I got home late. The train was stuck, whatever. I walk into the house. It's 10 minutes to left. But so what do? I put down the blech, throw some chicken in the pot, throw the water in, put the fire up a little bit, and put it on, and that's it, and leave it alone. And a couple of hours later, it'll be cooked. So, as long as I had a blech, that's mutter. I put it up before Shabbos, and that's it. It's not what we prefer. We don't prefer the food to be cooking on Shabbos. For technical reasons, but the mutter it is, we have a blech. Now, what happens if it's late Friday afternoon, and I also, it's Yom Tov, and I forgot to put up the chicken soup. So I want to put it up. But it's not going to be ready till the night time. So what's the halacha? So here's where we get involved in the difference between the two reasons. If the license to cook on Friday is because it may be used on Yom Tov on Friday itself, however remotely, no way I can use this on Friday, it's just not ready to be used. So consequently, there's a violation of you cooking on Yom Tov for the next day. I cooked, but it's not usable. So that's not permissible. So according to that view, I have to cook early enough on Friday afternoon that the food is at least half ready by the time Shabbos rolls around, by the time Lichbenchen comes, or at least by the time Shkia comes. The food is at least half cooked. Because the estimation of the Gemara is that half cooked food can be eaten already. I may like it better done than that, but half cooked is already normally edible. We had a famous, you know, different people become footnotes in history for different reasons. Some rather famous and some rather notorious. So there was a thief in the time of the Gemara. And he made history. He made the history books, this thief. He made the halacha. He made Jewish history. He appeared in the world of halacha. His name was Ben Drusoy. Now I wonder if Ben Drusoy was a little bit also a play on words. Because Doras implies someone like an animal that eats, you know, something which is really on the raw side. So I'm not sure if the name also was a play on what his real name was. But it was called Michael Ben Drusoy. Ben Drusoy was, he had the typical problem of a guy in the Old West. And that is, the sheriff was always after him. So, if he bothered to put up a fire for too long to cook, that's one of the most dangerous things. Because if they're looking for you and they see a fire and smoke, they know where you are. So that's a very dangerous enterprise. But he did have to eat while he was on the lam. So Ben Drusoy was very quick with his cooking. And he didn't use something which was more than half cooked. I mean, it wasn't to eat the steak well done. He was afraid that he would wind up being well done. So he actually made history. He became recorded as Michael Ben Drusoy. This was the food of Ben Drusoy. That's the way he actually ate. He ate with partially cooked food. So that's the least amount of cooked which becomes edible. So this is a halachic term which became Michael Ben Drusoy. So he actually became a footnote of the halacha, Ben Drusoy. So the Magen Avraham says that that's what we have to do on Yom Tov in the afternoon, Friday afternoon. The food has to be at least half cooked by the time Shkia rolls around. That it would be edible on Friday itself.
If you go by the theory of Kedusha Achas,
we'll come to that in a moment. That's
see how that would
help. If you say it's Kedusha Achas, then you don't have any problem. Because the license to cook on Friday is not because I can use it on Friday, but Friday and Shabbos are all the same day. They just have a different halachic coloration. Till Shkia is one halachic coloration, after Shkia is a different halachic color. And let me ask you a question. Once the sun comes up, Shabbos morning, do you read the Kriyas Shema Shel Arvus anymore? No, that's all. So different times have different halachas to them. So from the standpoint of Kedusha Achas, Friday and Shabbos is all one thing. It's one day. It just has different colorations. The first half is one coloration. The second half is a more stringent coloration.
What I'm saying is when that stringent coloration...
Doesn't matter, but I'm not doing malacha. It's no different than any other Friday afternoon.
With a
black. I have a black and it's cooking, that's it. I would
how
be.
Do that?
Okay, so I'm not saying it's certainly not the thing that you ought to do. And the most important reason not to do it is a reason that Rav Henkin pointed out. There may be other reasons too, but the most important reason is a reason that Rav Henkin pointed out. Rav Henkin said that now in this day and age that we live in, you know, we don't have hearth ovens in the United States. So a hearth oven is hot all over. Once you get the heat up, the whole thing is hot. In our stoves, we put up one fire for Shabbos, typically. So how much is hot? Really hot is only the area right around. So what do? Because of that? We put the heat up enough that it keeps even things at the outer perimeter warm. But if we want to really get something hot, if you come down Shabbos morning and you want a good hot cup of coffee, right? So you push the left back right on top of the flame, and you sit down to your Mava Sedra for 15, 20 minutes, and then you get a cup of coffee. Now, because of that, so we move things around on the blech on Shabbos. When I teach my Talmidim Hilcha Shabbos, the first thing that they ask me, Rebbe, I don't take care of the kitchen. What are we learning? Oh, to make a shear for my mother, you know, make a shear for my sister. She's going to, what does that have to do with me? By the time I finish, they're afraid to listen. Because they're going to find out what else they didn't do that they're not supposed to do. So I said, you want to be Mechala Shabbos the easy way? I'll tell you the easy way to do it. You know, you're not going to go on Shabbos and take a steak out of the fridge, put it in a pot, and put it on the right. You're a yid. You're not doing such things. That's not what you're going to do. Chas v'shalom. That's not our concern. But what might you do? I'll tell you two things that you could do. Or three things that you could do. And all of them, you could be Mechala Shabbos the easy way. effortlessly. And it won't even bother your conscience. You go to the kitchen. One thing, if you have a wife or a mother or a grandmother that's a good cook, and you come into the kitchen, so you're tempted, you want to see what's up. You know, you pick up the pots, you look inside, you schmeck a little bit, you know. Now, if you open a pot which is not fully cooked, and you close it again, you know, machal shabbos, you're over bishul. Why? Because closing it, you're causing it to become hotter than it would be if it stayed open, and to cook more rapidly than it would otherwise cook. And your mama, it's 100% chilul shabbos deraisa. B'chayav chattis, you'd have to make a carbon chattis in the Beis HaMikdash if you did it. What else? If you move pots around on the blech, and I move the pot from a cooler place to a hotter place, and it wasn't fully cooked, I would also be machala shabbos. So that was what Rav Henke was particularly concerned with, that since we moved the pots around on our blechs. So he said, if you want to make sure you're not machala shabbos, make sure the food is fully cooked before shabbos begins. Then you'll stay out of trouble. Now it could also be, if you analyze things carefully, that you can take a pot of food and move it from a hotter spot to a cooler spot and still be machal shabbos. Now you ask me, how could that be? It's very simple. It depends how you move it. If you just slid it along and you never actually took it off the blech, then as long as you went to a cooler place, it'd be fine. But suppose you picked it up and moved it to a cooler place and put it down there. So what happened? The hand is faster than the eye, but there's a point when you picked it up. It was off the blech altogether. Now you put it back on the blech. So you just went from a place which is cooler to a place which is hotter. So for all of these reasons, one has to ought to be careful Friday night not to have uncooked things on the blech. But if in times of necessity, you do such things. But if you do such things, you have to be very careful. I tell people, if you have a necessity to do it, something came up, you're late, and whatever, you're behind. The challenge, we didn't, whatever, is not made. Fine. Take the pot, put it on the fire, throw everything into the challenge, and do not touch the pot until tomorrow when you're ready to eat lunch. Just, that's it. It's an immovable object. You don't open it, you don't close it, you don't move it, just leave it alone. Okay, but that's not always easy to accomplish. A kitchen has more than one person prowling around in it. So this machlokas, if it's kedusha achas, which it is, has a very relevant lahalocha. And as I say, the basic view of the poskim is that one should follow the view of hohel, that it should be cooked early enough in the day that it's at least half cooked and therefore edible on Friday itself. For a soup, b'shas atchak, if it didn't happen, and a person won't have perhaps what to eat on Shabbos appropriately, there are times at Terem to rely on the view of Kedusha Achas. But that's not normative. Normative is that it has to be done early in the day. So this, what starts off as an esoteric machlokas, has in fact very concrete manifestations. Now, why did they make sov kosov? If for one of these two reasons, either because of Kedusha Achas or because of Hohel, because it might remotely be used, if it is Mutim and Atayra, then why did they make the Takon? Then I need an Erev Tavshila. So the answer is for one of these two reasons that we have, either to make us more aware that I can't cook Miyuntum L'chol, or to put us on our toes to remember to prepare something nice for Shabbos too. Shabbos should not just be the leftovers from the Yuntuf meal. Now, stemming from the view that the halacha supports the notion of hohel, that the possibility of using it Friday is really the normative, operative reason for Erev Tavshila. So from this we come to another halacha, which we are, Baruch Hashem, a gehillah that practices, and in fact one of the gehillahs which introduced it in the city of New York. And that is, that in Siman Tov Kof Chav Zayin at the beginning, so the Chofetz Chaim cites Achroinim, and it's the way he paskins, that on the day that we make an Erev Tavshilin, on the Friday of an Erev Tavshilin, we should daven Mincha the early Zman, and daven Marav before Shkia, in other words, make a plagman, you know, in those days. For what reason? So that, because normally by the time if we're going to start Baruch Hu, and we did Kabbalah Shabbos already, so for me, with Kabbalah Shabbos, everyone's going to finish cooking by that time. So this is an insurance to make sure that we cooked early in the day. And how will it work? Well, we're going to be Mekabel Shabbos. We're going to light licht. So that's it. Tam v'nishlam. You light licht and you Mekabel Shabbos. So you finish everything by that time. So this minig of davening early, Baruch Hashem, we introduced a number of years back on Shavuos. Those that were here recall. And Baruch Hashem, it's taken off. It's become very popular, not only in Kew Garden Hills, but throughout the city of New York.
One thing I'm bothered about is that you're not, the problem is still the same problem. What you've done is made it earlier.
No, it's not exactly, it's neither way is it the same problem.
Because when you make Shabbos, it's when it's Shabbos. So whether it's you wait till Shkia or you wait till the plot,
it's not exactly the same.
Why?
For many reasons. I'm aware of this problem, and I've been asked this kasha before, it's not the first time. Because you don't really, at the most, let's view it from a few different standpoints, from three different standpoints, I'll answer your question. What Ronnie wants to know is, once I'm a Kabbal Shabbos, so I can't do Malacha Aniyah, so what changed? I just moved the time earlier. Now let's follow three things about Tos for Shabbos. We'll start with the Rambam. The Rambam really is the most radical view. The Rambam in the Yad only has Tosfos Yom Kippur. The Rambam does not have Tosfos Shabbos, and the Rambam does not have Tosfos Yom Tov. According to the Rambam, the din is a din in Tosfos Yom Kippur. That's number one. Number two, to whatever extent it exists, that you maybe you're allowed to do it, so we find two views. One view is it's midrabanan, it's not midraisa. So that's already an answer. If Tosfos Shabbos is only midrabanan, so I certainly gained that I didn't do the malacha. Finally, even if Tosfos Shabbos is duraisa, but that only the imperative is not a loisa, is an asay at most, even if it's duraisa. So I cannot really violate Shabbos in that regard. It's not really Shabbos in the sense of the time that you can't do malacha. In terms of the malacha, the din malacha shabo, the lois asay of malacha is the lois asay of yontu, it's not the lois asay of Shabbos. After I was mekabel Shabbos, if I did malacha, I might violate an asay perhaps, but I'm not a mechal on Shabbos. So that's okay, so I think we've answered the question on three levels. Now, let me come back to something that Gittel mentioned before, because it's a very, very important point. Classically, what was an Erev Tavshilin? An Erev Tavshilin was a matzah, maybe a challah, a matzah, and an egg. Right? Now, why is that? Why did the egg, now, it has to be something that would be used typically as a main dish. That's true. So you could have used a piece of chicken, a piece of fish, a piece of meat. How did the egg achieve such popularity? And the truth is, today at times, I don't always use an egg. Sometimes it's more convenient. I take a piece of the gefilte fish, or a piece of the white fish, and I mark it. I take a toothpick and I put it into it so I know which piece it is, and then I make use that for the air. So how did historically, why did the hard-boiled egg come to be? So the reason the Aruch HaShulchan indicates, the reason for it is very simple, particularly on Shavuos. Shavuos was really the worst of the problems. Because Pesach and Sukkot in Eastern Europe, well, it was cool and it could even be cold still. But by the time Shavuos came around, it was hot. And in the absence of refrigeration, you could imagine I wanted to shecht on Yontif. You could imagine a little bit what happened, a chicken that you shecht on an Erev Yontif, what it looked like on the second day of Shavuos. So, what they found, now, the halacha is that if the Erev Tavshilin ceases to be in existence before you finish cooking for Shabbos, then you're cooked. So this is the problem. So what do we do? How are we going to have an Erev Tavshilin that's going to hang around, even in the hot weather? So our forefathers discovered that a hard-boiled egg is a pretty hardy creature. And even under those circumstances, I guess inside the shell, it's not going to spoil too quickly. So that's why the egg emerged as the most versatile main dish in terms of being used for the Erev Tavshila. That's how the egg came into existence. It's very interesting. It's interesting sometimes how the technology dictates what the culture becomes. Now, what do? How do we make the Erev Tavshila? So this also was a matter of debate in the Rishonim. The primary view is that we need to take a piece of cooked food, and that's the primary thing that we use to make the Erev Tavshila, or something cooked. There's a second view, the view of the Rabbeinu Tam, that says that the cooked food only gives license for cooked food. But for baked or roasted food, you need something baked or roasted for that. So what emerged from that is that we use something cooked and something baked. So the baked item was something like a bread, a piece of bread or a matzah. And the cooked item was something that could serve for a main dish. Now, which is the ikar? B'di'eved, as long as I have the cooked item, I'm in good shape. If I have only the baked item and not the cooked item, no wash. Doesn't work. So the ikar, the principal part of the Erev Tavshila is the cooked item, not the baked item. That is also, the process is very mysterious. And it's often not properly explored. What does the text of the Erev Tavshila say? That Bahadain Aruva Yesharalon Alameful of Ashola Latmun Chama Ulamidlak Shrogo Miyom Tobol Shabbata, right? We should give us license to cook and to bake and to light candles and to be matman chaman, to put away hot water, in other words, wrap things up in heated places. Ulasoye kolt tzorchona, and to all the needs that we have from Shabbos until Yontov. Ulamebat kolt tzorchona rather. Lonu, ulachol adorim birazais, for us and for all those that live in this city. Now, I can get up and I can say that every Erev Yontov from now until doomsday, and the Erev Tavshilim will not help anybody else other than myself. Despite the fact that I said, Lonu, ulachol adorim birazais. Why is that? And why also we need to ask us, why only lo l'chol adorim b'razos? What, I'm parochial? The Jews that live in Detroit, I don't like. The Jews that live in Yerushalayim, I don't like. Why only the Eden in New York? And the guys in Stanford, they're in my time zone even. What's with them? So the answer is twofold. This text only works if it's preceded by something else. The notion of the Erev is that an Erev is not just a big sign, Zohar HaSiyom HaShabbos L'Katshe, or Zohar HaSiyom Tuf L'Katshe. An Erev has to work halachically, has to be possessed by the person that's using it. So consequently, what I need to do, if I want anyone else to be able to use my Erev, is I have to have someone acquire part of my Erev for them. So I need to take someone, and in my Sefer I go through who that someone is, preferably someone not from my household, preferably, and give them the egg and the matzah, and tell them to make a kinyan that they should be koina chelek for everybody that lives in this entire metropolitan area. It's an entire city of New York. After that, I can make the brocha and say, Lonu ulechol adorim b'razos. Then the Erev can work for them if I make the declaration. But if I make the declaration without the kinyan, as my Baba used to say, Zu zogen lieb haben kosten dich kein Geld. You know, you can promise what you want, but it's not worth too much.
Got the kinyan, does it still work for you?
Yeah, it's mine. I own it. I don't need the kinyan. The kinyan is only to be mezaka others. Then why do we say Lonu ulechol adorim b'razos? Because the Erev has to be for people that live within the Tchum, that they could come and partake of this Erev. If they can't come and partake of it because they live outside the Tchum, so it's useless for them. It's not an Erev for them. That's why it has to be limited. I don't need it necessarily. I don't necessarily need a kezias. No, Erev L'chatzeres has a certain shear. I need 9 bayim, and 9 bayim is enough for the whole world. But Erev L'chatzeres doesn't even have that.
If someone lives in isolation, more than a ton away from other people.
He has to make his own Erev Tavshilin, yeah. 100%.
He can't make an Erev Tavshilin.
He can. He doesn't need to make his own. He doesn't, you don't need to have...
The whole idea is because someone may come to visit you, and you may...
Well, listen, that doesn't mean anything. That doesn't, no, yet you can't know. And never some guy got lost in the forest. I'll tell you some other time the story of a Korva man that got lost in the forest in Guatemala. And he made a Balas Tshuva because of it. That who lives in the Balas Tshuva lives in Bayit Vegan today. And my Korva lives in Yerushalayim. But that's because he got lost in the forest in Guatemala. But that's a story for a different day. Don't ask if people get lost in this world. Anyways.
One person in the city is already making this kinyan. So there's any point in other people.
Yes, so the next halacha is that there's a chiyav lechatchila on every person to make his own Erev Tavshilin. Now, how often I can rely on someone else's Erev Tavshilin is a matter of significant debate in the Poskim. There are those that say that it's good, it's a once in a lifetime matter. That's it. If I forgot one time, I can be samech on the Rav's Erev. After that, NG. Others don't agree with that. It's a gray area really in the halacha, exactly, you know, what the din should be.
But when you're making your own,
yeah,
should you also make a kinyan, or since the rub already is making
kinyan? Listen, whatever, it doesn't hurt if you make it. It's a good habit to be in. Let's say the rub, for example, went to China for this yontif and didn't make an eruv in this town. Then what do you do? So it's not a bad idea to do. Again, is it a chiyuv? On the rov, it's a chiyuv. The rov has a chiyuv to make sure that he has an Erev Tavshilin and his mezakeh for everyone. That's the rov's chiyuv. Now, let me turn to one more point. And what is accomplished with the Erev Tavshilin? What does it do? This is also debated in the Poskim. Is Erev Tavshilin only sufficient for things which are food-related, or it's sufficient for other things to other tzorcha yontif? This is a matter of debate in the Achrayinu, which it is. Again, principally, the halacha is lekula. Now, what's the relevance? The relevance is to many things, but even from very simple things. The question, for example, it's Friday afternoon, we finished laning in shul, and the gaboyim would like to roll the Sefer Torah in mincha time, before mincha, between mincha and marav, so that they don't have to stay after marav to roll the Sefer Torah for tomorrow. Are they allowed? It's achana miyontum lechaver. You can't do achana from one day yontum to the next. So are you allowed or not? So based on the Erev Tavshilin, it's permissible. It's permissible based on the Erev Tavshilin. Do you need the Erev Tavshilin for it? It could even be that you don't even need the Erev Tavshilin. That's a different issue. So it depends exactly how you learn a certain Yerushalmi. But that's, again, that's not for now. Yeah?
The Erev Tavshilin only talks about cooking and baking.
Well, it also says, Lemebat kol tzorchano. Right. They do all of our needs. Talks about that Luke shrug to light a candle. So it's not only cooking and making, or the Meba Koltzrachana to take care of all of our needs. So what is included in that? Only food related items, other things too, which is a heter to do on Yontif. So this is also debated, but again, principally the view is Lakula in this regard. Yes, only from Yontif to Shabbos. Now in actuality, I don't know why it's so clouded. Now, you cannot use, let's say there's a 3-day, Pesach we had a 3-day yontif. Thursday, Friday, Shabbos. The Erev Tavshilin does not allow one to cook from Thursday for Shabbos. Or the Erev Tavshilin only allows from Friday till Shabbos. But if we consider the fact that in the world of halacha, when does the day begin? Sorry that I didn't close this before. Yeah. excuse me. My apologies. Now, in the world of halacha, we count that the day begins in the night before. So, consequently, you can be here Thursday night, you can make a chonos for Shabbos already. You don't have to wait till Friday in the daytime. It's a matter for the whole Yom Shishi. So any time on the day preceding Shabbos, starting from after Tzeisav Chom Thursday, until the end of Friday, you're allowed to do hachonas for Shabbos. Yes?
Why can't you use the same theory to prepare Thursday afternoon for Friday afternoon? Maybe someone will show up.
I told the min ha-Torah you could. But with the Rabbanan you can't. They only gave you a heter for Shabbos, correct.
But then our Yom Tov Sheni is a solder Rabbanan, but I'm just saying really only one day is Yom Tov.
That's a different question. Only one day is actually Yom Tov. That it does in fact have, because we only keep 2 days Yom Tov, because after the rise of the Tztukim, who interfered with the Kiddush HaChodesh, so they had to use overland messengers, and overland messengers in their world were pretty limited in their scope. So we enacted a second day Yom Tov because of that. But in reality, only one day is supposed to be Yom Tov. Now, there are very few manifestations of the fact that in reality there's only supposed to be one day Yom Tov. One of the few manifestations is the idea, suppose, for example, on the first day's Pesach, someone came to Shul the first day Yom Tov and said, Rabbi, I forgot to make an Erev Tov Shiloh, what do I do? So there's an Eitzah. Let's leave the matter of the Brocha to the side. Assume we don't make the Brocha in such a case. So a person takes the Erev on Thursday and he says, if today is really Erev Yom Tov and Yom Tov is supposed to be tomorrow, then I'm making an Erev Tov Shiloh for tomorrow. If today is Yom Tov and tomorrow's not Yom Tov, then I don't need an Erev Tov Shilin tomorrow. So I'm also fine. And then on Friday, you can cook on the basis of that Erev. So there is the theoretical aspect that there's really only supposed to be one day Yom Tov does play a role again in the world of Halacha L'Maaseh. It only works on a 3 day Yom Tov. It will not work on a 2 day Yom Tov because maybe the today is Yom Tov and tomorrow is Shabbos and not Yom Tov, and that's it. And a 2 day Yom Tov, it won't work. And it can only work on the first day of a 2 day of a 3 day Yom Tov, not on the second day. Okay, any further questions? Yeah, Menachem. Could you cook the egg? Well, you'd have a problem if you're not going to use the egg today. So you'd have to do it, and so you should really take something which has already been cooked already by that point in time.
Now, Erev Tov Shiloh usually is eaten at the end of Shabbos, or really should be eaten at the beginning of Shabbos?
I'll tell you. You want to know when the Erev Tov Shiloh is eaten? I'll tell you what happened. In history, there were two practices, and they both sort of faded out. And we have the shadow of one of the two. In general, we have a principle in the halacha which states that if something was used for a mitzvah, now you have the opportunity to use it again for a mitzvah, so you use the same article for a mitzvah. Okay, how that jives exactly with the notion of mitzvahs chavilis is a different subject, but that's not for here and now. So we have the notion, for example, that you take if you have your lulav and you go to bake matzahs, so you throw it in the oven to bake matzahs with your used up lulav, type. So, one view said the following, I made an Erev Tov Shiloh, I did a mitzvah, so now let's do another mitzvah with it. So Friday night, they used it for the Lechem Mishnah, and they ate it Friday night at the meal. That was one view. A second view said, oh, let's really go to town. I'll use it Friday night as the second of the Lechem Mishnah. I'll use it Shabbos morning as the second of the Lechem Mishnah. And Shalosh Shudas, I'll use it as the active one of the Lechem Mishnah, I'll eat it for Shalosh Shudas. So that's how the minhag, in fact, emerged, that we eat the Erev Tov Shiloh and Shalosh Shudas. What lapsed along the way is it's no longer common to use it as part of the Lechem Mishnah at the first two meals. So all that remains is the shadow of the second minhag. It's reminiscent of the fact that once upon a time it was used by our forebears for all the meals on Shabbos, and they finally consumed it at Chalashud. This is part of Suda Shabbos. The egg, I guess, if you were consuming, I presume, if you were eating the matzah for Chalashud, so the egg fit right in to eat together with the matzah. That's what I presume is the reason, that it by us it remained for Chalashud. But the truth is, once you finish cooking, even on Friday afternoon, you could eat it. Okay, anything else? Okay, so that's a little bit, a few ideas about Erev Tashem.